Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
It is summertime. Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me celebrating this beautiful summer. Don, how you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Happy July to everybody. What better way to celebrate the blazing summer sun of Don than talking about a very dark, kind of depressing record?
Yes, but, you know, kind of an imploding star, a supernova. So
It has taken a dark turn.
Indeed.
As we knew it would.
All right, so this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and each other very deeply. Let's just think about that for a minute. All right, we got a great show for you today. We are going to explore in depth the album Black Star by David Bowie. Don's going to give us a deep question. Then we're going to have some shout-outs to some albums and album-related items that we're digging, and then we'll get into what we'll be talking about on the next episode. But this time, it's all about that Black Star.
I proclaim this the summer of
Donnie Lakey.
That's what I'm talking about!
Yeah, so the summer of Don continues, although that sun has been covered up by a black star. As you might already know, I went back into the Album Nerds archives to, you know, the time before I was on the show, made a list of records I'd like to talk about, gave it to Wadbot. It was put on the wheel of musical discovery. And this week it came up, David Bowie's Black Star, an album you guys only briefly mentioned during the year-end countdown episode back in 2017, episode 11. So Black Star is the 26th and final studio album for David Bowie, born David Robert Jones in 1947 in London, England. He worked with longtime co-producer Tony Visconti and a bunch of jazz musicians. Reportedly, Bowie had been listening to Kendrick Lamar and Death Grips. According to Visconti, they were trying to avoid rock and roll. And I guess most famously, Bowie died 2 days after the release of this album from liver cancer. Let's hear the title track. This is Black Star. Spirit rose a meter and stepped aside. Somebody else took his place and bravely cried. I'm a black star. I'm a star. Yeah, middle part is so different from the beginning of the tune.
Yeah, that song evolves a lot over the 9 minutes.
It better.
Right.
Yeah.
So Black Star won a Grammy for Best Rock Song and Best Rock Performance. At the beginning, he talks about the Villa of Ormen, which I had to look up.
The Villa of Ormen. Yeah, I didn't even know what he was saying.
Yeah.
It just sounds cool. Yeah.
So it translates to the, it's House of the Serpent.
Oh. Just,
yeah, kind of strange lyrics, but again, you know, seems to, you know, have something to do with his death. You know, you get to that point there where he's like, something happened on the day he died. Seems maybe kind of autobiographical.
Maybe it's painted by seeing some of the videos that he put out for this, but it felt kind of like Dante's Inferno when listening to this song and this album. You know, there's something afterlifey and like a journey of some kind that you're taking with him, and starts off with a bang now.
Yeah, and then the video alludes to or might allude to Major Tom from his song Space Oddity.
Ground control to Major Tom.
The day he died, it was Major Tom that died. Major Don was going to be my stage name. Yeah, I also read that it could be connected to an Elvis Presley song called Black Star, which was written by Sherman Edwards and Sid Wayne. In the lyrics of that song, it says, "When a man sees a black star, he knows his time has come." And I've also heard that a black star could refer to a cancer lesion.
So, black scar, sort of. Yeah.
So, lots to think about there. I mean, you guys barely talked about it years ago. What are your thoughts on this album?
I mean, at the time it came out in 2016, it's pretty like emotional time, at least for me. Like, we had just gone through the election, which was its own thing in the U.S., and then Bowie passed away, you know, pretty soon thereafter, and It was surprising. I think this record, like, as we talked about, you know, really took on new meaning after he passed. And all these songs, you're like, wow, these are really just about him dealing with his death. And so I think it was nice to come back to it after some time has passed and be able to appreciate it more for the music and less of the emotional response that I was feeling back in 2016.
I mirror that. I mean, it was the same. It was kind of like this fascinating thing that there was this album that was alluding to his impending death.
Yeah.
So it was more kind of like, whoa. And I really hadn't experienced the record. So I am also glad that we have a chance to really dig in and see what it's all about.
Yeah. For me, I was really back on the Bowie train. I loved his previous album, The Next Day, from 2013. But that was a very straightforward rock album. So I remember listening to this, you know, on the first day and being like, oh, this is interesting. I'm going to have to spend some time with it. And then 2 days later, you know, he was dead. And I listened to it. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy is like literally dying, you know, as he's, you know, recording this. And yeah. It just really changed the meaning of the record. All right. Well, let's hear some more. Here's a track called "'Tis a Pity She Was a Whore." I'm going to use a bad word. Whore.
We just watched that movie, dude.
"'Tis a pity she was a whore."
Who's playing saxophone?
That's Danny McClaston on tenor saxophone. Kicking ass, I must say. It's a re-recording of a track Bowie had written back in 2014 for that record Don had mentioned there, The Next Day. Yeah, I think that song in particular, I mean, this whole record to me just feels like such a bold statement to make, especially at the end of your career. It really goes for it on this album, especially, you know, these handful of cuts at the beginning here that feel a little more experimental, a little more avant-garde, and just exciting and interesting to me. My clickbait headline is: Bowie leaves behind a monumental legacy. Black Star only leaves me wanting more. Would have been really interested to see what he did after this, after kind of putting out a record, which is kind of like just, you know, a sharp left turn in his discography. Like, what do you do after that? I guess we'll never really know, but I'm super glad that he did put out this album, and I think it's a testament to just how creative and not different of an artist, but he was willing to take risks, and you could feel it on this album. You know, he wasn't, didn't like to be pigeonholed. I think this shows that. I mean, as much as I thought this previous record was good, it was kind of more of a typical Bowie kind of sound, whereas this is not. That's cool.
He sometimes would kind of return to something that worked for him before. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, he was always taking chances. And I would say that he had nothing left to lose, and that's why he took chances on this final album, knowing that he was sick. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just that's who he was as an artist, regardless.
Yeah, so that's what it felt like to me too. Interesting that he kind of cites like some like hip hop to Pimp a Butterfly from Kendrick Lamar and D'Angelo's Black Messiah as like being things they were listening to in the studio before recording this.
Now I believe him. A lot of times, a 69-year-old man who said that stuff, like, I've really been listening to Taylor Swift to get rid of, like, sure,
yeah. Right, just kind of, you know, a little bit.
But I believe him.
Yeah. I like that it, you know, so he's incorporating, you know, jazz musicians and jazz elements, but it's not, hey, this is David Bowie doing a jazz album. You know, it's a jumping off point or something, you know, it's...
Yeah, it still feels very much like a Bowie record, like... Yeah. You can feel a stamp on every track.
Yeah, the drum machine sounds, those electronic sort of...
Mm-hmm. Stuttery drum beat. It's very Bowie. Yeah.
Well, plus the you know, vocal differences and the... She's a whore! And the shaky voice. Like, is that because he's in a weakened condition? Is it because that's how he's emoting this particular thing? But there's a lot of questions you can... As you're listening to the record and every song, I found myself asking myself a lot of questions about... Why do you do that? And that's not always the case with records, especially of legacy artists like this who've been around for 20 plus records.
Yeah.
A lot of times by this point, they're just kind of making songs that sound like them to sell to the handful of fans they still have. But that's not what this is.
Yeah. His voice sounds really good at times. And, you know, I mean, I wonder how much help he had, you know, with the processing and stuff
studio
like that
magic.
To make him sound good. But
yeah, he definitely is layered, you know, there's a lot of reverb going on. But even on that track we just played there, "Tis a Pity She Was a Whore," I mean, he just lays it out. I mean, he's like, it sounds like he's exhausted by the end of the track.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I really can like feel the emotion, energy just pouring into that performance on that song. And I don't know, I'm there with him for it 100%. I think it's pretty impressive.
All right, well, let's hear more. Here's a track called "Lazarus."
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen.
I love those. It sounds like someone hitting a guitar strings with their palm, you know?
Yeah, it's so heavy.
Yeah. That feels like maybe one of the more accessible tracks on the album, even though it's over 6 minutes long.
It's still, it seems like the album's over before you know it. Even though there are some long tracks, it's like a 40-something minute album. It does not drag in the subject matter, and the feel should, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
At least not for me. Yeah, so just to throw it in there for folks that don't know, Lazarus is a character from the Bible, from the Gospel according to John, chapter 11, verses 1 through 45, and it's the story of a guy being brought back to life by Jesus. So, you know, you might hear the term Lazarus a lot, and that's what it's referring to.
Yeah, so some people have speculated that Bowie might have been kind of predicting increased fame after his death, which certainly, you know, was true.
Yeah. I love the line, like, he's like, everybody knows me now or something like that after he's up in heaven. Yeah.
Of course, it could have been referring to, you know, lots of other people over the years, too.
Of course. Yep.
So my clickbait headline for this record is, like Mozart, Bowie writes his own Requiem.
Nice.
I don't know how much of that, I mean, a lot of the Mozart stuff is kind of mythology, I think, so I don't know to what extent that was, you know, like the movie Amadeus, where he's sitting there, you know, writing his, or composing his Requiem.
I mean, he's a performance artist too, right? So those videos that are paired with this, including the one for Lazarus, which is quite striking, isn't he building, you know, his own legend? Isn't he creating these moments so that we talk about it like, whoa, this sounds like it's from the grave and all that kind of stuff? I mean, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
I can't imagine what that experience is like, you know, to really be, I mean, it's like planning your own funeral and, you know.
You got to really come to terms with that, like at a deep level, to be able to lay down in that bed in that video and put those buttons on your eyes, like... That's heavy, man.
But, I mean, I'm sure, of course, no one wants to die. But as the artist that he was, this was an opportunity to explore something that you, until you're dealing with it or facing it, you can't explore it as effectively. And so that's why it feels so haunting and real, because we know that he was sick and we know that he died a few days after this was released. So it has a supernatural, spiritual feel to it that you're somehow connected to the other side, whatever that might be.
Yeah. And, you know, Bowie so often, you know, writes characters. And I think this album is, I mean, it feels like it's personal. It's about him, you know, which I, you know, feels like maybe one of the most, you know, sincere records he's done.
Well, yeah. The song Lazarus, right, being risen from the dead, isn't that kind of what happened? I mean, if this album had come out and he hadn't died days later, I feel like that's what triggered so much interest and people truly paying attention to the record. You know, I think so in a way, he was resurrected.
By the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. You know, I mean, in a way, like, this album is also dealing with his death, but it's also kind of giving his fans a way for them to process his death. Mm-hmm. So it works on many levels. Honestly, I wish more artists would do things like this. I think his death is something we're really bad at talking about and thinking about as a society, and having something like an art piece like this that really gets into the depths of it is, I think, really valuable.
All right, let's listen to the final track. This is "I Can't Give Everything Away."
As we've talked about, this album is kind of cinematic, and this song certainly is as well. features orchestral strings, harmonica, sax, guitar solos that kind of recall the Robert Fripp's classic Bowie collaborations. But it's kind of the reward for enduring some of the experimentation. Like it kind of, I think it's somewhat about the album. It's about him as an artist. Like, if you want to know me, pay attention, appreciate my creations. I'm not just going to give you all my secrets and tell you what these things mean. I think it's kind of, it's a goodbye saying, experience this, experience my music. You know, this is my, you know, like the kind of the final curtain, the bow. This is what it kind of feels like to me.
Yeah, kind of like it's in your hands now. I've given you everything I can.
Yep.
Yeah. Carry on my legacy.
I'm not going to give you every detail. Figure it out.
Right. Yeah.
So the clickbait headline I came up with for this one is a haunting masterpiece that echoes his other names while exploring mortality, identity, and the uncompromising creative legacy of a true space oddity. Unique dude. Unique artist, able to continue to morph, even doing an industrial album there in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Continue to explore, to never stop creating as an actor, as a musician. That's what it was all about for him. It wasn't about being a star. So this is just a really beautiful way of saying goodbye and also saying hello. I think it cements his legacy as an artist.
Hey, you know, you say goodbye, I'll say hello.
There you go.
Wrong artist. I know what I was talking about Bowie is, he's always painted himself as kind of the outsider, you know, looking at us kind of like from an outside perspective. But so many people just resonate with that idea. It's kind of amazing that he's kind of made almost everybody an outsider in a way that we're all brought together and similar like that. It's kind of beautiful in a way.
Well, through his characters, Ziggy Stardust and Aladdin Sane, and even this is sort of his character of the Black Star, you know? I think it's made it a comfortable way for him to let it all out. We're the benefactors of it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do this. I am going to nominate David Bowie's Black Star for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. I think, you know, with aging artists, you know, particularly the ones we love, when they come out with material, you know, sometimes we'll say, oh, this stands up with, you know, their, you know, some of their best works. And a lot of times it's, I think we're stretching when we say that because we want to be able to say it.
So are they. Every artist always says this is the best album we've ever made.
Yeah. But in this case, I really think it's true. I mean, I think this stands up there with Ziggy Stardust and Low, you know, as an artistic achievement, even if it's only because it deals with a subject matter that, I mean, certainly people have, you know, done stuff about death, but I don't know. This is just such a unique work, and I think it, you know, it deserves to be celebrated. What do you guys think?
You should go first, dude.
I don't want to. You know, I was thinking about this possibility, and I hoped it wouldn't come up.
Me too.
In the context, in some ways, yes. I mean, I could see, because it is a specifically creative way of saying goodbye, and it's a great album, but at the same time, like, did it shape music? Did it...
Is it in Bowie's top 5 records, you think?
Or? Right. That's the question. Is it even in the top 10, you know, and...
But I think Bowie could have 10 Hall of Fame worthy albums, maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, or at least 5, you know?
Yeah. It's a tough one. I think it's one of the toughest ones for me to decide on. Because for me, it's a very emotional record. It's hard for me to separate this from like the art, from like my response to it.
Yeah.
So from that regard, obviously it'd be a Hall of Fame record. But if I look at it more critically, I don't think it's a perfect record, especially the B-side, I think is... not nearly as interesting to me as the beginning. I think if I'm being honest, I probably would say no. But I would definitely be okay if it got in there because I love it. But
yeah, I feel exactly the same. You know what? I'm on the fence with it. And this will give a chance for the album nerds out there to vote. So I'm going to say yes. I want it there. I'm not quite all the way there. But yeah, I'm going to say yes. That's... so we can get our people involved.
Okay. So, well, we're not quite there yet. I don't know if Bowie made it to the gates of heaven, but he hasn't quite gotten to the gates of the Album Nerds Hall of Fame yet either. So please go on our social media and on our website and vote Black Star into the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time for Deep Questions by Don. This album was, in many ways, a goodbye from Bowie to his fans. What other final works of art left that impression on you?
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, the one that came to mind in recent years, or I guess decades, was Heath Ledger's portrayal of the Joker in The Dark Knight back in 2008.
And here we go.
It's impressive to see someone go out kind of at the top of their game, you know, like kind of like Bowie here, kind of doing something new and creative and impressive. I think, you know, Heath's portrayal of an iconic character still holds up as being maybe the most memorable Joker performance. Joker's such an iconic character. It's gonna say, like, is that better than Jack Nicholson? I don't know, you know, tough. But definitely unique and definitely memorable. And I think something people look back on as being like, wow, that was the thing that happened in 2008.
Well, I think, you know, up into before Brokeback Mountain, I didn't really think of him as a dramatic actor.
Yeah. He was in like 10 Things I Hate About You or something like that, right?
Yeah, stuff like that. I was vaguely aware of him, A Knight's Tale. But that performance is... even if he hadn't passed away, I think that would be one of his defining ones that might have become an annoyance in his career.
Getting typecast a little bit.
Yeah, because it was so shockingly good. It was just like, because everyone had Jack Nicholson in their head from the 1989 Batman. So,
yeah, he just made it much darker, much realer. And yeah, definitely one that came to mind for me.
Yeah, a believable psycho instead of a cartoon character.
Yeah, exactly. What came to mind for you, dude?
Because of this, the Bowie situation, and thinking about an album that comes out and then passes away shortly thereafter and it becomes the final album. Now, in Bowie's case, he knew it. In the case of John Lennon, he did not. So the album Double Fantasy by John Lennon and Yoko Ono comes to mind. For him, it was a new beginning, right? It had been 5 years since putting out an album, and Just Like Starting Over is the opening track. And I think it was this hopeful sort of John Lennon at 40 years old. And it was released November of 1980, and he died shot in December of 1980. Wow. And it has become his legacy, you know, his final record. So that came to mind first for me.
You think it stands up in terms of the quality?
Yes. It's among his best solo work. I mean, this one's with Yoko, but definitely, it's a great album.
Check it out. Yeah. Donald?
Well, I don't know if you would consider a speech a work of art.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I think about, you know, kind of people facing death and saying goodbye, I think of Lou Gehrig. You know, you can find the audio of the speech anywhere. You know, he famously, you know, lost his life to ALS, which is known as Lou Gehrig's disease. But so after, you know, he was still basically in the prime of his career when he had to, you know, basically shut it down because of this illness. And, you know, right after his retirement, they did a Lou Gehrig Day at Yankee Stadium, and they brought him out and he made a speech. And it's the one that starts out with, you know, today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth, which is just such a weird thing to say, you know, because the guy's dying. But he's, you know, talking about all the support he's had and, you know, what an amazing life, you know. So it's just it's an incredibly, you know, powerful speech, and he's crying as he delivers it. And, you know, I just, again, I just can't imagine experiencing that.
Yeah. Yeah. That clip from that speech, I think, is infamous as like JFK speech or any of those others from that period, like,
and the pop cultural references to it,
since Sleepless in Seattle,
movies and TV shows, and
good pick, man.
Feeling kind of sad now.
I know you like it.
Yeah, the summer of Don sucks. I got a thunderstorm going on.
All right, well, what other famous goodbyes are there? Let us know. Visit us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, we've been, saying goodbye to David Bowie for a week now. Other things you've been digging this week,
all right,
Andy?
I got a collection of new releases here in my
Velcro wallet.
Yeah, it's my Ridged New Line wallet from.
Ooh, not a sponsor.
Sponsor of every podcast in 2015.
Not this one. Not yet. Hey, Ridge.
All right, let's check it out. We'll start it out with Nadie Sa, I believe is how you'd say her name. The name of the record is Filthy Underneath. This is the sixth studio album for the singer-songwriter from the UK. She's touring with Depeche Mode right now, Donald. We'll play Topless Mother is the name of this cut.
Giggity.
Giggity.
When you were born, you broke the
Not what I was expecting.
Yeah, interesting.
It's a really interesting record. It's got a dark, I would say, kind of gritty sounding. She's got a great voice, too.
Is that electronic? Like, or is the music electronic, or is it?
Very little, I would say.
Cool.
All right, the next one up for me is a hip-hop group from Ireland. You guys remember back when we did our Ireland show?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a growing scene there, and... Ireland. The group is called Kneecap. The name of the track is Fine Art. So, yeah.
The track is Lucky Charms.
Yes, they're Irish.
Cool.
This is their second album, three-piece. It's interesting to me how much dance music has found its way into Irish hip-hop scene. It's much less of the traditional hip-hop sound.
Yeah, I mean, I love accents in hip-hop in particular because we're so used to American delivery. So
yeah.
It can really change the rhyme schemes a lot. So, it's fun to listen to because it's so different.
What was the guy's name we did, the Irish rapper?
Nilo.
Nilo. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was a little more organic sounding than this, but
yeah,
very good as well.
Yeah. All right. Last one for me is a collaboration between James Blake and Lil Yachty. The album is called Bad Cameo. We're going to play the opening cut, Save the Saver.
You know, it's funny. I'm familiar with Lil Yachty, but I have no idea who James Blake is.
Would you be surprised that we've probably reviewed two of his records over the last
not at all 5 years? I couldn't place the music at all. And I think every time we've talked about him, I've been like, hey, never heard of him. You're like, we already did it. Sorry, James.
I was thinking of James Blunt first.
Yeah.
You're beautiful. Right.
That could have been him on that track, right?
Ballpark. Sort of, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting collaboration, I would say, if you're a fan of the hip-hop and R&B sounds. I think it's a good one. What you been digging on, Don?
Well, I was listening to another podcast called the New Wave Music Podcast, and they had a group on called Urban Heat. They're actually kind of like a dark wave post-punk group from Austin. Their second album is coming out in August.
Austin, England, or...?
No.
What?
Yeah. Austin, England,
Texas. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's a single called Say the Words. Yeah. So their first album, I think, is pretty good, and it's kind of all over the place. You know, so I think that song there that I just played isn't necessarily indicative of all of their work.
It's a little more understated than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, with the post-punk, tag on there, I thought it was going to be it's just one song.
Yeah, they are, I think, maybe a little more streamlined. I think there's only I think it's a three-piece. So I think there's maybe more space in their sound. Hmm. Okay. Another thing I've been digging. So I got this book that Robin Hitchcock just released. It's called 1967, How I Got There and Why I Never Left. So it's kind of a memoir, but it only focuses on like this three-year period in his teenage years where he's at this boarding school. But it's really interesting. I like the way he writes. It's very similar to how he writes his lyrics, sort of intellectual, but also silly and strange. Hmm. And kind of like there's an inside joke that you aren't completely in on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way of summing him up. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fun because he's talking about the first time he heard Dylan and the first time he heard Bowie and stuff like that. So even though it's not like a career, it doesn't tell the story of his career, it sort of gives you an idea of how he got where he is. But also in September, he's going to release a corresponding album called 1967 Vacations in the Past, and it's all cover versions of songs from 1967. So the one that was just playing there is Itchy Koo Park from the Small Faces, which came out in 1967. So looking forward to that.
Small Faces. Cool, man. Definitely have to check out the book. That sounds interesting. He's such a... Whenever I hear him talk, I'm always like, I listened to this guy talk for a long time. I feel like he'd be a good at giving a speech or writing a book.
Yep. Yeah. It seems like everything like is an inside joke or a wink that only his people understand.
You know? And even they don't understand.
Yeah.
No one really gets it, but it's funny anyway.
But they pretend to. Yeah.
Right.
Dude.
All right. So I have listened to this once. I just stumbled on it. I need to spend a lot more time with it, but it's a band called Truck Violence. The album is Violence, and the song is Undressed You Lant Before.
To be written about. To be written about. To be written about.
Wow, interesting. Sounds a little avant-garde there, pretty dude.
I know. They're from Montreal, but I guess they grew up like near the Athabasca tar sands, which is like northeast Alberta petroleum production area.
famous music from the petroleum area there, yeah.
Yeah. Carson Henderson and Paul LaCour's experimental hardcore, but it reminds me of the late 80s Seattle sound, poetic, intense, without any fear or aspirations of being famous or just making this music, which has a lot of banjo in it, by the way. There's something just true about it. And I haven't gotten into what the lyrics are or whatever, but it's an interesting sound. It just sounds like industrial and dirty.
Covered in petroleum.
Yes.
Interesting.
Covered in oil.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm always exploring new country music, and a lot of new country music sounds like old country music. I stumbled on a guy named Braxton Keith, who I guess is kind of a rising star. Not an album yet that I can find for this song. It's called Lonely as the Lone Star.
By the way, in Texas Tuesday, singing songs in honky-tonks in barrows.
Kind of your throwback country. He's from San Antonio.
No relation to Toby.
I'm calling it the new wave of traditional country. I don't think he's related to Toby. But he's got a curled up waxed mustache, which is part of why I was like, hey, who's this guy?
What era is he supposed to be from?
Yeah, so that song Lonely as a Lone Star, I assume there'll be an album coming. But it's just fun.
Interesting.
Finally, for the album collection, a few months ago, I did finally get my hands on Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys on vinyl.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if we were older than we
were? Yeah. It's a pretty good record. Why isn't that part of the Summer of Dawn?
I think that maybe that's how we should end the Summer of Dawn.
Maybe. This is the 11th studio album, a creative response to Rubber Soul, Brian Wilson's masterpiece. Introspective lyrics and innovative production, and it's one of those that has a couple of songs on it that you know, and then some other stuff to dig into. But I think every record collector should probably have a copy of it, just like they should have a copy of Sgt. Pepper or that kind of thing. So
yeah. I was just listening to this the other day, and I was thinking how it's like symphonies, or it's like classical music sort of disguised as pop music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of his secret.
Yeah. And my copy is a reissue. It's not like a original or anything like that.
Is it the mono or the stereo?
Stereo.
Nice. All right, so what have you been digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website at albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
All right, well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great British singer-songwriter David Robert Jones. You guys know who I'm talking about?
Davy Jones.
Go.
Davy Jones the most.
Talking about Mr. David Bowie that we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes here. All right. So Mr. Bowie said, if you feel safe in the area you're working in, you're not working in the right area. Always go a little further into the water than you feel you're capable of being in. Go a little bit out of your depth. And when you don't feel that your feet are quite touching the bottom, you're at just about the right place to do something exciting. Kind of love that quote from him. With that in mind, we're going to do something a little bit exciting on next week's episode. We're going to be talking about new releases from the first half of 2024, picking out some ones that have piqued our interest, and then we're going to resume the Summer of Dawn following.
Okay, does David Bowie's Black Star belong in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you once again for joining us on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time when we discover some new music.
Cool. Thanks for listening, buddy. See you then.
We can be heroes. Sounded just like him, didn't it?
No. No. Sounded like the Michael Bolton group was doing a Bowie cover album.
Let's hope that never happens.
That'd be interesting.
I'm intrigued now.